views on this program are opinions of dentist industry experts and do not constitute personal financial advice. This program is furnished by Dentist Advisors, a registered investment advisor. You're tuned into Dentist Money Industry Expert Series. Now here's your host, Reese Harper.
Welcome to the Dentist Money Show, on site at the Yankee Dental Congress Convention in Boston. I'm here with someone that I met that I thought would add a lot of insight into your lives as it relates to OSHA and HIPAA compliance, which is a subject that many of you struggle with, but don't want to spend a lot of time on. And I'd like to ask Pam to introduce herself here today. Pam, why don't you take a second and introduce yourself, explain a little bit about your background and how you got started in this world.
My name is Pam Dembski-Hart, and I am a clinical laboratory scientist, which most people really don't understand what that is.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing.
And most people think that I'm either a dental professional, whether it's a hygienist or an assistant or a dentist. But I actually, my background is very strong in laboratory medicine or laboratory science. So I have a degree in a Bachelor of Science in Laboratory Medicine, which my focus was primarily a lot of biology, a lot of chemistry, and because of that, it put me in a position to be able to manage these types of regulatory compliance programs because of the fundamental skills and the knowledge that I have.
Yeah. Were you interested in it as well beforehand?
I've always been interested in it. I always liked microbiology, but I also enjoyed the teaching aspect of it.
Yeah.
And so the natural progression for my profession was to actually be in a laboratory field where I would be sitting at a microscope or doing analysis, and that really didn't sit well with me. The technical part did, but the working by myself or alone or,
you're very much
or not
a social,
really having communication with other people, I was frustrated because I knew what was going on, but I really didn't have anyone to talk to. So I got into teaching. And in the hospitals, I got into teaching other students. And then when OSHA came out with the regulations in the early 90s, I worked for a large community health center outside of Boston, and they asked me if I would manage the program. So it was 350 employees, so we actually got the regulatory compliance program for OSHA started there.
And the name of the company is?
My company is Healthcare Accreditation Resources. It now is 6 years old, but prior to starting the company, I worked for another private company that went to outpatient practices, primarily outpatient practices, doctor's offices, dental offices, to assist them with the regulatory compliance. On an aside, I actually inspected funeral homes and veterinary facilities, too.
Jeez, you really did do a lot.
So what we would focus on was their compliance with the OSHA regulations, primarily the biological hazards in the workplace and also the chemical hazards in the workplace. And we would help them to identify what they are, and then we would put a program, and I put a program, as I do now, in place for them. So as many aspects to the program, but that primarily is what it is.
Okay, if you can hear some ambient noise, it's because we're here on the trade show floor. This is one of our industry expert series podcasts, and so sometimes we don't get a chance on site or live to really interview people that we've wanted to interview. I think the one main question that a lot of our listeners will have today is, what is kind of one big mistake that you see people make with their compliance, and maybe not one and maybe a related mistake, but kind of think of one main area in which you see violations a lot.
To give it a large term, I would call it perception is usually the problem. And it's the perception that either the law maybe doesn't apply to them, they're not sure what the aspects of the law is, so they perceive they're really okay, and or the perception that they are in compliance, that they are actually addressing the regulations, but what they've done is they've touched the tip of the iceberg, and without the expertise in that area, they are not able to really be in full compliance.
Okay, so they don't know whether they don't really understand whether the law applies to them, a particular law or aspect of the law applies to their practice.
All the elements of the law, too.
Okay. They don't really understand all the elements of the law itself. Do you see, I guess, how many dentists would you say understand the elements of compliance law? Like how what's the understanding of what, how many guys out of 10 dentists really understand, you know, if you had to say.
So I'll answer that in two parts. They all understand OSHA regulations apply to them for the most part. They understand that HIPAA regulations now and the CDC infection prevention and control guidelines apply to them. What they don't understand is the complexities of the law. So I would say, and I don't mean drilling down to 100% of everything that they're supposed to do, but I would say probably 90%, if not all of them, don't understand. And of those practices, the practices that I visit and they'll say, you know, I think we're okay, we're really pretty much okay, I can almost with certainty say 100% of that is not true.
Yeah.
Based on, you know, the assessments that we do.
So that's kind of a broad term, right? The perception, maybe. Is there one kind of micro area where you'd say, oh, I see this a lot, that's a mistake?
Lack of appropriate training.
Okay.
So, and by that, they may say, okay, we've had our training, but there are, again, detailed elements according to OSHA and to HIPAA and even infection prevention and control. That's more, the infection prevention and control part is generally state to state required. So different boards have different requirements or address it differently. Not that you can be non-compliant in following the dental CDC guidelines, but some boards are a little bit more strict about following up on that than others. But the training requirement isn't that you just watch a video and now you've satisfied the training requirement. That's actually a violation of the OSHA regulation.
Interesting.
The training is not met by listening maybe again to some video or audio and then taking a quiz. It has to be an interactive type of training specific to the type of practice with the opportunity of the attendee to have an immediate response to any questions that they may have.
Interesting.
And that doesn't mean an email back to somebody. So you want to make sure that you address all, and OSHA's very specific, and that regulation, there's two, 29 CFR 1910-1030.
Wow, that's a lot of numbers
29
there.
29 CFR 1910-1200. But
those are like
codes.
I say
that because that will actually list what you're supposed to cover in the training.
Cool.
So their OSHA will bullet it right out. So, but it's a lengthy, detailed, and I do them year after year in the same practices. And because of the information, people don't retain it, and that's to be expected.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump to a different question here then. If there was one kind of implementation that someone could do, a common thing that people aren't doing right now, what's one activity or one cure, one solve that we could give our listeners that they could go and apply right now?
Conduct a risk assessment. For both HIPAA, it's actually required. That isn't even an option.
Okay.
And in a risk assessment for HIPAA is you look at your physical safeguards, like where do you have equipment and is it secure? You're required to look at your technical safeguards, which is, you know, your technology, password protection, encryption, things like that. And then you're also required to look at administrative, what do we have in writing?
Okay.
And it is required that you do the assessment. That is going to help you objectively to look at what aren't we meeting here? What don't we have in place? And it may be as simple as we haven't even identified a privacy officer in writing. We don't have a posted privacy notice. It hasn't been updated according to 2013 requirements. So that's a key thing with HIPAA, privacy and security. With OSHA, also you should do a safety audit, but you really should have someone do that audit that is knowledgeable in the subject matter.
Okay. They have to document that audit, don't they?
HIPAA, you have to document the audit. OSHA doesn't say you have to do an audit. OSHA expects that you are compliant, though, with all the requirements of both the bloodborne and the HAZCOM. So it's your SDSs, it's your exposure control plan. I'm talking two different hazards here, but you know, it's your training, it's protective equipment. They don't care how you get there, basically, just that you are there, you maintain it, and you implement it.
So how much time would you kind of say throughout a year that a dentist needs to be expected to invest so that his, I mean, what's a good goal? Like,
and
how
question.
Frequently, you know?
That's a great question. Initially, when you're implementing the program, that would be your biggest investment. So initially when I come in, I would do the audit, and that could be a half a day on site. Then there is a report, and then I come back and we have the policies, procedures, and the manual delivered and the training. So that might be, if we wanted to say 16 hours, right, initially. But then, that's through me, but then it's like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yeah.
So you have to have somebody who's committed in the practice
for accountability and follow through, right?
Right. And so I provide them, or we provide them with the documentation needed, explain to him and guide them through the whole process. And now you just have to sit down and do it. And then there's always us as a resource for any questions.
What would you guess, like, that person in the practice that's assigned needs to spend on a monthly basis to stay in compliance and kind of review processes?
Maybe an hour.
Yeah, an hour to 2 hours might be adequate, right?
I mean, because you're talking about documentation for maintenance of equipment, waste tracking forms, the record keeping for your spore testing, you know, which is your board thing, you know, employee health records, hepatitis B documentation, the fire extinguisher checks, your eyewash weekly checks. But it sounds like a lot, but if you have it nice on an Excel spreadsheet or something, it's really making sure you're doing the right checks and following it. And you go, okay, this is what I need to do weekly, this is what I need to do monthly, boom. And if it's not right, to not just write it down and ignore it, take a look at what's going on.
So if somebody does a risk assessment and then follows through an hour or two a month throughout the year, how frequent would you recommend having a risk assessment done, or what kind of ongoing accountability does somebody need to, because like you said, you can educate a group, you can educate a staff person, you can educate the dentist, but then, you know, a year passes and we've probably forgotten most of what we talked about, you know?
I find the biggest problem with the compliance and the implementation is the management commitment to the program, allowing whoever the person is on site who's assigned to that duty the time to do it.
Yeah.
So that's why it does, like you said, it will fall by the wayside because somebody's called in sick. And so instead of them doing that regulatory compliance piece now, they're going to be doing their documentation, they got to fill in.
Yeah.
So then they're off the next day. And then, you know, then before you know it, a month has gone by. And it can be crucial if there should be a problem in the practice or an inspection unannounced or whatever. So when I do the audit or they have, you know, an audit done, the audit isn't just a checklist that says yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. It actually identifies what the problem is and what the corrective action is.
Uh-huh.
And so it's actually a tool, like a guideline for them of what to do next.
Now, would you recommend, because they're not going to have somebody internally following up on this outside of the staff person that's been delegated that responsibility initially, besides a professional, right?
Correct. But, and I can speak to Massachusetts on this, but I think many other boards concur, the dental owner is ultimately responsible
right?
for all the implementation of any regulation. That so either they do it or they assign someone that has a vested interest in it too. You know, don't make someone do it who doesn't like the job.
Yeah.
Is competent in doing that.
I've struggled with that in my own practice. You know, financial services is a really heavily regulated industry. We have a compliance officer assigned that is one of their 30 responsibilities, right?
Exactly.
And then that person's kind of piecemealing together as much as they can. And I, the practice owner, have a tendency to just hope that what they're doing is adequate. My learning curve on compliance is kind of growing over time, but I'm never, you know, unless I invest time every year into some hours, you know, into self-education or training or CE, it's kind of like an ongoing learning curve that I can't quite keep up with.
Exactly.
It's not like the body of knowledge I had to master was complete and then regulations never change, right?
Exactly right.
And so I think one of the tendencies people probably have is, I already did that once, right?
Right.
I did it once.
Right.
So do I still have to keep going and doing it again?
Right. Right.
So how often do you see regulations change and wish that you could just like notify everyone and say, oh, you know, and so,
sometimes even myself, I say, please stop. I'm really getting this under my belt. But I, How often did you say?
Yeah, how often do you see, I mean, if people are having an update from at least annually, that's probably enough to keep up with changes, right?
Yeah, and if they partner with anybody, as something does change, like with myself, anybody that I'm working with, any of the dentists, I will send them updates as it happens, because sometimes I don't come in there again for another year after we did the training. It depends what they prefer.
Yeah.
But I'm always available. And the good thing is, with email and voicemail and all that, I will just send out information that is relevant to whatever the change has been to their practice. And there also is some empathy. I have to give some empathy to either the directors or the owners of the practices, because their area of expertise is dental medicine.
Yeah.
And then some of them, depending on when they started in the field, things have just changed. I mean, look at HIPAA is a fairly new, you know, I mean, 1996, but still, that's fairly baby.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. The serious implementation didn't take place till 2001 and 2003. Mm-hmm. And then they changed the rules in 2010 and 13.
Yeah.
That's all HIPAA, And so they're trying to get their work done. So what's key is to find someone in your practice that you can rely on to do.
Yeah.
I do see that problem, too, where they think it's getting done.
It's hard.
It's not.
Yeah, you need to have some ownership over every program in your practice, but especially compliance. It's one of those things where you don't really care about it until there's a big problem, and then you're upset that you didn't take the time, and then there's pretty serious consequences, unfortunately,
There are. It's like an insurance policy in a way. You're happy when it's there, when it's needed. Even though it's a regulation, as far as this compliance, a lot of times we put it on a back burner. We're all like frogs in boiling water, as I say.
Yeah.
But the repercussions can be devastating. They take time away from your practice. It's a distraction. It's a bad press. And in some cases, it's suspension or loss.
Yeah.
And what we have to really focus on is whether it's the injury or the issue to the patient or the employee.
Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it seems like one kind of nice takeaway for me, at least, is because I can relate to this, is that you need to consider the fact that this is a really important segment of your practice. It's not an afterthought.
Correct.
And proactively set aside time. And for myself, I try to calendar things like this in a way that I take seriously.
Correct.
So I'll say, 15 minutes a month on this time on a Friday, I'm going to
get this done.
Do this. Yeah. And I know I've got 12 subjects to cover over 12 months. And, I'm going to sit down and actually think about them.
Correct.
And then having a resource that can hold you accountable to whether your understanding of that problem or that compliance issue is clear enough.
Correct.
It seems like that's how many people do you think are correctly implementing a program like that? Out of 10 people you meet, you're saying 9 out of 10 people really don't have a program where their OSHA HIPAA compliance is conforming.
When it's an initial visit, it's probably really 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
But after that, it really depends on the support from the dental owner or the dental director for the person who has that responsibility. Because I would say probably less than 50% maintain it. And quite often when they know that I'm returning, they feel very somewhat embarrassed. We're coming back. I'm like, this is not a criticism. This is time to help you, and we'll get it done. And it's not going to get fixed all at once. And I think sometimes they get a little overwhelmed with it, so they just put it aside.
Yeah.
That they don't really know where to start. So what I try to do too is prioritize things for them. I'm a little leery of doing that, because if they're all non-compliant issues, I don't want to say, oh, this one isn't important and this one is. But you got to start somewhere. So why not start with the one that may have the most impact either on your practice or your patients or your employees?
Yeah.
And we start there. But it's a learning process. It's just, and they have to have the support and utilize the resources.
Yeah. Well, Pam, I really appreciate you coming on today. It's been really insightful. I think this adds a good This adds some good context to this issue, and that's a good reminder for people that this isn't kind of a subject or in their practice that they can kind of just handle as an afterthought, you know? Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And how would people get in contact with you if they wanted to reach out and kind of get in touch?
They can. My website is www.har.us, like United States.com, or www.healthcareaccreditationresources.com. Also, my email is pdh for Pam Dembski Hart at har.us, like United States.com.
Well, thanks, everybody. This has been a great thanks for tuning in again at the expert edition of the Dennis Money Show with Pam Hart. Pam, thanks so much, and we'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.